Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, psychic, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio television talk show personality. She brings to the airwaves talented people from around the world who share their insights and experiences with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna.
Welcome, welcome to an hour of mind power. And what is mind power basically? Well, it's your capacity to learn, and it's a capacity of understanding that there's a lot more that goes on in life than most of us have been taught. And part of the advancement of anyone or anything is the awareness that knowledge is ever expanding, and you don't ever buy into a particular aspect without questioning and asking yourself, what if? My guest today, Susan B. Martinez, is a woman that is a researcher. She has an insatiable curiosity. And because of that, she has developed the disciplines of questioning. And her book, The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man, bring a lot of unusual information to the surface. Hi, Susan Martinez. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me back.
You know, Susan, I find that this book, this information that you've researched and you brought together, really, to me, is not far-fetched at all. It's just really something that's going on right now. We are a composite. I jokingly, for years, have said, I'm a Heinz 57.
Exactly.
Because of my genetic background. And I often joke that because of my father being Italian, that you never knew who the Romans were fooling around with. And people would just laugh at me, but I'm joking about it, but I'm not joking, because the aspect of intermarriage has been something we're seeing demonstrated to a phenomenal degree today with different people from different parts of the world. And I think it's terrific. I don't see it as a bad thing. However, when it comes to science, I really was intrigued with how you have brought certain things to the forefront. But I have to say right off the bat, I love the cartoon. The very first of the book, there's three apes. And one is scratching his head in the cartoon, and another one is talking to the other one, and to the third chimpanzee. It says, well, of course he's despondent. He thinks we're descended from humans. I love that. I love that, because so many people have espoused that we're descended from apes. We're not, but that's beside the point. We buy into a lot of these myths, and you have a breakdown right in the beginning, what you call the hominid gallery, which is a breakdown of fossil men and women. And I know you'd use the term men and man just as a generic factor.
Right.
And you state that in the front of the book. I love this. I really think you have been able to take so much information that for the average individual would just be suffocated by, and you've been able to break it down, and it shows how we go maybe a lot further back than people think, number one. And number two, there have been the ups and the downs and this family tree. Let's talk about what you've titled the very first chapter, The Unexpected Family Tree. What is the family tree, and who set this thing up?
Well, those are the evolutionists we're talking about. Darwin published On the Origin of Species in 1859, and that's a long time ago. We have dumped most of Victorian science, but we're still stuck with Darwinian evolution, in which we supposedly changed by genes, fortuitous gene mutations. I don't think there has been any genetic change in mankind from the very beginning, and I think the whole story can be told by showing the hybridization of the races from day one, that they mixed and matched And that's how new races came about. We don't need evolution. We don't need natural selection. We don't need genetic change. And we don't need to come from the apes either.
It's fascinating stuff. You talk about the new religion of the intelligentsia is non-religion, and I had to smile at this because I have found, and I know I've done it. I think we all do it. We like to have classifications. We like, to, as people, to put things in little boxes. We want black and white, when in reality, there is this phenomenal array that is available to us. But it's challenging because our very educational system says this is black and this is white. This is just the way it is. And I've found, and I'm just saying this because I'm a woman of mature years, this is, my goodness, there's a lot of these so-called absolutes that are not absolutes. And that's part of what comes out in your book.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the science versus religion thing, because I think that's at the heart of all these problems we're having in our sciences and in our theories. It became a matter of form right after Darwin. It was with Darwin that was a revolution, because they dropped the Bible, they dropped the biblical or a religionist, creationist version of things, and they decided that the way to explain everything would be by, in a material way, without a creator, without, in a godless, in other words, science since 1859 has been a study in atheism, the atheist explanation. It is considered unscientific to bring in any spiritual ideas, but it's a false dichotomy between science and religion. Science, first of all, I mean, when you had the quantum revolution in the early part of the 20th century, it became apparent immediately that science was dealing with something that was unseen. You cannot see subparticles. So the whole thing opens up what is in the unseen universe. I don't believe that science is should be restricted to the seen or material world, because there are forces. For example, we cannot see gravity, but we know that it exists. It's a force, and the same goes for everything else in the unseen world.
And that's very true. And it has been coming to the forefront more and more. We use a term, energy, that seems to be more of a neutral word.
Right.
Because we have camps
exactly
that want to go to one extreme or the other. So we use the term energy.
Right.
I like that myself, because then it doesn't put any limitation. Energy comes in such diversity. It's marvelous. It's exciting. It's wonderful. And I wanted to bring out a point that you state about science, and this I know for a fact, because I've known different scientists through the years, and it's been a real angst for them. And I'm going to quote Michael Crichton, and this you got from his book, State of Fear. Scientists are in exactly the same position as Renaissance painters, commissioned to make the portrait the patron wants done. The system works great against problem solving, because if you solve a problem, you're funding in. Scientists are only too aware whom they are working for. Those who fund research always have a particular outcome in mind. Now, again, this was Michael Crichton, the gentleman that you quoted. And I have heard this from people that are involved in research and science. And they just go, this is frustrating to us. We're finding all kinds of different things. Let's bring it out. Let's talk about it. Let's not stay within these false walls of ignorance. It's good to question. A true scientist is one, like yourself, a researcher, that is going to question. What is it that's not holding up? What is it that needs to be disengaged from? And it's so easy to say, oh, we're so superior to people in the past, but we we stand on the shoulders of those that have gone before us, good, bad, or indifferent. And learning from those that have made observations in the past many times is very viable. So here we talk about the hybrid patterning of man, the mysterious origins. You bring out a country called Pan, P-A-N.
A continent.
Yes, it's a continent. And it, is it Mu, as so many people have wanted to call a continent? Is it Mu?
Yes, it is.
It's
the continent in the Pacific Ocean that is no longer there.
All right. And, let's talk about this.
Well, I'm trying to get my thoughts organized on this because one of the first things I'm going to do before I talk about the continent of Pan in the Pacific is talk about the Atlantis myth.
Okay.
Because, you know, they're kind of in competition. You find many writers today, and that includes, that is actually includes many of the esoteric writers of today, and they're all talking Atlantis, and nobody's talking Mu. I think the true history goes back to Mu, but that Atlantis caught on. It was started with a parable that Plato recounted, and there have been thousands of books written about it. But let me switch over to Pan, because I think that, and of course, this, I'm standing on the shoulders of James Churchward, who did this work 100 years ago and published several books on Mu that are still in print. And he was not without faults in his theory, but who is? I mean, all of us make mistakes. But I think he had the basic idea right. And he was good in geology and in spiritualism, and in, he was a man of all seasons. He made the most elaborate study of the lost continent in the Pacific. And the flavor of his work was to follow the descendants of the survivors, and he found them in Mexico, he found them in Peru, he found them in Babylonia, he found them in China. So that's the line of thinking that I'm following, and I think we need to know that the biblical deluge, the great deluge, the great flood, the Ark of Noah, all of that reverts to the sinking of Mu in the Pacific 24,000 years ago. And those are the racial founders we need to look at. I think Atlantis was a footnote to all of that.
I think that there is so much that we're just, because of our technology today, we're just beginning to find out about. I get very excited when there's an archaeological dig that's discovered in a middle of a desert area that is so devoid of life that people think this is not possible, and then someone kicks something and they find this artifact and they cordon off an area and bingo, they find there's been this massive civilization that lived thousands of years ago. But at that time, it was a very luxurious environment. Volcanic upheavals, plate shifting and the Earth's crust, areas of land disappearing underwater, and we'll touch on that, how off of the shores of Okinawa new things have been discovered. Technology is allowing us to have the opportunity to literally dip back into a time and frame of human experience that, oh my goodness, 30 years ago, wouldn't have even been considered. You would have been a laughing stock of everything.
It was prophesied 24,000 years ago that in this time, the time that we're in right now, the lost continent would be discovered. And
oh, my.
It is because of the technology. They have airborne sonar readings. They're finding canals in the Mayan region. And those go back to that period when the survivors of Pan settled there. That was the first place to be settled, in Central America.
It's so fascinating. Now, one of the points that you bring out, and this is in the beginning of your book, which, again, I just absolutely love, retrobreeding and genocide in times past curbed the march of civilization. Disease also curbed the march of civilization in the Dark Ages. I mean, we can look into the recent past of the Middle Ages and look at how, because of wars and slaughters and all this horrific stuff, I mean, we look at human history, what we've got, it is just pretty nasty, a lot of it.
Well, right now, new era that we're in marks the halfway point of humanity on this earth. Mm-hmm. The first half was filled with war and bloodshed, and we're coming to the conclusion of that now. Our world is full of war. But we're in a time of change, and that change is the destiny of mankind. We're halfway through our experience, and what is coming after all the systems of today fall away, what is coming is a world without war.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yet we've got to go through all of this stuff.
Exactly.
To grow up and realize we don't need to have war. This is not necessary. But it is a patterning that's been around for a long time. Now, you talk about a lot of history. You go into a great deal of history. And I really enjoyed, because I have a very strong association with Alaska, how the Inuit people talk about the first of their people were Caucasians. They said maybe 10,000 or more years ago, and they were taught by these people. You go into the question, where did Caucasians come from? And you go into the questions, where did the
Negritos are the pygmy-sized brown people.
Mm-hmm. And there's all of this wonderful information. And when you read it and the way you present it, it is no one group is superior to another group. You just need to understand that this is what we have found. And again, a lot of this information deals with recent archaeological discoveries. But the Caucasians, where did they come from?
They came from, they were the survivors of Pan.
All right. And
they were the Noah. They were the Noah people. Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. That much is in the Christian Bible. There were two more sons, those who went to Japan. And Japan has the name of Pan in it, Japan. Mm-hmm. And the fifth was the son who went to the Americas, and that has a special name, an ancient name. That name is Gautama. Mm-hmm. And they landed in Guatemala. It still has the name Gautama. Ed, the law is Guatemala.
Mm-hmm. And you talked about how the Inuit, there were blonde Inuit. Now, whenever you think of Alaskan people, the native Alaskans, you automatically picture them with black hair and, you know, real stocky build, and there's all this that they came across, this connection, the Siberian connection, this land mass. I mean, that's been promoted for years.
But yeah, and you know what? The Indians, none of the Indian tribes have an oral history that traces their origin to Siberia. It's only the scientists who say they came from Siberia, from the Bering Strait.
Now, I was intrigued with the Arctic metropolis that has just recently been discovered in an archaeological dig. This was an extremely sophisticated environment.
Right, and that's not supposed to be there before the Neolithic. The way the standard model teaches us is that all civilization began somewhere in Mesopotamia, 9 or 10,000 years ago with the Neolithic Revolution, which was the introduction of agriculture. However, we can find culture genes from America, from South America, that go back double that time, go back 20,000 years ago. And they were the same civilizers, the sons of Noah, who brought the arts of agriculture, of astronomy, of maritime civilization to each of these five places where they landed.
You talk about in your book blood types, which I think is very interesting. Of course, one of the biggest things now is people, especially if they want to trace their genealogy, they will go in, get their DNA tested, and they find that they're a composite, which I think is fabulous, because we need to know we are all composites. We all have various things in our genetic pool, and they don't even have this to the level of refinement. I think that it's going to be someday. But you talk about there's very few American Indians that have a B blood type, and it's B blood type, you say, is very common in Eastern Asia. That is something that I found a very unique point of detail.
Yes.
And how was that assessed? I mean, are there, because we have the different blood types, we have the O, we have the A, the B, the positive, the negative, the B, the positive, negative, and then the combination blood types every once in a while. But why is that?
I don't know.
That is a point that I find intriguing. In fact,
yeah, that's something that needs a study. There are two areas that could clear up the migrations of people and where they came from. One is the blood typing and DNA. And the other area, I think, is linguistics. I'm trying to get into that more deeply now. I was just online before I spoke to you, trying to get a dictionary of the Polynesian language so I can find the words and the language that indicates the spread of people out of the sunken continent of Pan.
Yes, and not only that, but you mentioned, speaking of the Polynesian language, that 42% of the Japanese vocabulary is Malayo-Polynesian, and that there is a grouping of people called the Jomon people, J-O-M-O-N,
yeah,
that historically, in Japanese history, they were considered to be this extremely sophisticated group of people.
Yeah, why did the Japanese, claim to be the oldest people in the world, and in a certain sense they are, because Yista, which is one of the names for the landing place in Japan, has the oldest pottery in the world. And pottery, of course, is associated with agricultural people, so they were not barbarians. They were cultivated people. And the Jomon pottery can be dated to 20,000 years ago. That's 10,000 years before the so-called Neolithic revolution in Sumeria. If you look at the map, you can see that the closest place to the missing continent of Pan is Japan. So that's where civilization first took root from the settlers who came there as survivors, and also in America. They reached America, as I mentioned, in the lands of Guatemala. So it's beginning to come out that that the standard model that requires everything beginning in the Fertile Crescent just doesn't work. Like you say, technology brings out what was going on 10, 15, 20, 25,000 years ago in different parts of the world, and it was civilization. But the thing we need to remember is that in olden time, in the ancient past, proto-history, people of civilized life lived on the same planet as primitives and barbarians. It has never been different. It's still the same. There are third world people living in a Stone Age style of life at this very moment, and compare that with the technology of the West. This is not unique to our time. It has always been the case, so that, you know, the anthropologists make out that all of mankind was a hunter-gatherer type of subsistence economy until the Neolithic revolution, but that is not the case. Some of mankind was hunter-gatherer, but there were the civilized people from Pan here in all the places of the world 20,000 years ago, living side by side with primitive tribes.
And not only that, but they were involved in transportation and so many other things. And I want to touch, because I know that we're coming close to the end of our conversation. Your book, you've got photographs, you've got maps, you've got information on language. It's just, your book, The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man, is a powerhouse of information that I think is more, you know, just fabulous. But you talk about Okinawa. And there has, and I think it was 2 years ago, when the film came forth about a man, and I don't recall his name right now, that was diving. And he finds this humongous stone formation. And there have since been some other documentaries done on it. And it's a stone formation called the Turtle. And it's underwater ruins off of Japan at Yonaguni, or Ryukyu Islands. I may not be pronouncing that exactly correctly, but this is something that it's huge. It's absolutely huge. It's man-made, and you talk about a rock specimen discovered by someone that has carvings on it that look very much like those in the Panic language tablets in the Book of Saffa. This is wonderful. It shows that there was a written language far earlier than we could have imagined. There is so much that went on, and volcanic eruption, whatever, affected things. This is incredible as a find.
Yeah, we're starting to connect the dots. In fact, information off of Japan, and by the way, the gentleman who wrote the book about it is Masaki Kimura. In Japan, that would rock the boat for the historians and the evolutionists. And so his book, which came out in the 1990s, has never been translated to English. And we didn't even find out about it for another 10 years. It was basically suppressed in the West because it would just be another nail in the coffin of today's standard models.
With this, Susan, when we're thinking about it, and that's what I think is so wonderful about having materials like yours published, because it allows us to recognize that we must question. We need to realize that there is so much more to the history of the human race, to the history of this planet. There is an incredible story to be told. And if we're willing to learn from it, which we can if we're open to it, we can become much more aware in our decision making. But that is a choice we make. And your book, The Mysterious Origins of Hybrid Man, go a long way to doing that. I'd like to ask you one question before we close, Susan.
Sure.
How has this changed your thinking? The research that you've done and the documentation that you've put together, how has this changed your life?
My life or my thinking or?
Well, that is part of your life. Your thinking is.
I'm afraid that it got me even deeper into the business of challenging the standard models in other fields of study. So after doing the Darwin book, which this is, you know, anti-Darwin, really, I've gotten involved in challenging the Big Bang, challenging the Ice Age, and challenging some current science, such as global warming. I think they're all based on faulty science, and it's all part of the old paradigm. And mm-hmm. and the new paradigm is going to bring in the invisible factors.
I agree. I think it is happening, and it is. The old school has a hard time letting go, and we know it's just a part of it. For those of you listening, The Mysterious Origins of the Hybrid Man by Susan Martinez is an amazing read. It really is, and it's interesting as a read because of the history she brings in, the documentation, various languages. You know, it's exciting. It's exciting. Because it can go a long way, understanding can go a long way to dissolving a lot of ignorance and false prejudices that so many of us have been raised with. We're all out. I mean, that's it. So expanding your thinking, expanding your world, it is a wonderful thing to do. Learning how to think is a process. Questioning is also a process that we should never give up. Susan Martinez, thank you so very much for being with us and today. And if you're interested in finding out more about this book, go to Bear and Company, B-E-A-R and company.com. Susan Martinez, thank you again for being my guest today.
I thank you for having me.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Amino Muscle Snack Time, the chewable nutrition that feeds your muscles. Amino acids are the building blocks of protein. When you exercise, muscle tissue naturally breaks down. This low-cal, chewable snack helps to reverse that process and won't pack on the pounds. You can chew a few tasty vanilla tablets or any one of their other flavors before or after physical exercise, right before bedtime or first thing in the morning to jumpstart your metabolism into gear for the day. Convenient to carry in a purse, backpack, or briefcase, they are a tasty snack for the person on the go. Firm, fit muscles, trim, healthy body. Sound good to you? Check out Amino Muscle Snack Time Chewable Nutrition by going to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Tone up, trim up, and nourish your body to the fitness level you desire. Amino Muscle Snack Time Nutritional Tablets. Check out the information and order today. Go to Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. Let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that might be of concern to you. And let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Well, I've got a fabulous story about Batman that I think you'll enjoy. And, of course, the news media was just talking about how in San Francisco, a five-year-old boy who had leukemia, which is in remission now, his dream was to be able to be Batman. And the whole community in the main city of San Francisco got involved in providing a melodrama event, including garbing this little five-year-old in his own personalized Batman outfit. Absolutely delightful. It showed how people can come together as a community, individuals as well as businesses, and it was a lot of fun. It was just really something very special to hear and see. And I think that it shows us when we work together, we can take something so simple as a child's dream and bring it into a reality, sharing it among ourselves and feeling better because of it. It's a very, very good thing. Donna Siebel here. Give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Well, we have a unique and dynamic lineup this week. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with John Murphy, Zenpreneur. How can we be involved in the development of our own businesses, being able to make a difference without having undue stress? How can you manage that? You know, the old image of you're supposed to be stressed, maxed out, stress, strain, yada, 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 all of that nonsense. Can we shift? Can we do it with a different attitude and demeanor so that we don't destroy our health, our families, and muck up our environment? You betcha. So we'll be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about healing sound. Jill Mattson, along with Sherry Edwards, will be my guests on Wednesday. We're going to be talking about how vibratory frequencies can stabilize physiological disorders. And this is something, it is not new, it's as old as time itself, but it's understanding it. Sherry Edwards is a woman who's done an incredible amount of research with this, and she herself has been gifted with a very, very special talent, and we will be sharing that with you. Jim Harold. Jim came out with a book a couple of years ago about ghost stories, and this is ghost stories, too. Oh, yes, I love ghost stories. And it's called Ghost Stories 2 Campfire. Yes, the campfire is just the, well, it just gives that nice little image, right? Well, we're talking with him. And job search list, checklist. We'll be talking about that on Friday. What can you do if you want to find a job? Yesterday, I happened to see an interview with a young man who has a wonderful education, but he can't find a job. He has paid tens of thousands of dollars for his education, and he's wanting to find a place where he can take his talents and his knowledge and put them to work. He said it's been a bear, so he decided to do something different. What he decided to do was set up a table with donuts. He said he'd sent out hundreds of resumes. Nobody even gave him a blip on the screen of opportunity. So he decided he was going to be more visible. He was going to do something that nobody else would do, and he set up a table and put donuts on it, offered coffee, and said, I'm interested in a job. Are you interested in hiring someone with my skills and talents? And he made himself very public. In fact, it was so public that it came to the attention of a talk show host, and that talk show host featured him on the show. It's a demonstration of innovation and also a willingness to go the extra mile to be seen. And believe me, he was. I dare say he ended up getting a job. But not everybody's going to want to do things that way. So Damien Burkle is going to be giving us some information on that. So that's what's coming up this week. Diversification, that's the name of the game with the Donna Siebel Show. Innovation is behind so much of what we enjoy as people today. People asking a question, how can I make this better? Look at some of the greatest inventions that were ever brought about. One, the sewing machine. It came about because Singer wanted to assist his wife. He wanted to enable her to sew in a much easier way. It wasn't all that long ago that to make clothes, everything was done by hand. And there were literally thousands of people that were employed, women primarily, because they had the small hands and they had the precision stitches. But it was a very laborious job. A lot of women lost their sight. In England, there was a lace making process that because they didn't have good lighting, women would go blind, and they would go blind at a very early age, primarily because of a lack of light, the stress and strain on the eye, I'd say poor nutrition went along with it, and then they were not able to do anything. They lived out their lives in the darkness with no vision. Well, people are coming up with all kinds of different products. We're becoming more aware also that in coming up with products, we have to ask ourselves, how do we recycle them? Well, you know how a smartphone battery, or if you've had a CD player, a DVD player, your batteries don't last very long. Well, if you have a connector, an AC/DC connector attached to your unit, all you need is an electrical outlet. Batteries die on you, just have a plug, you connect it, and you're up and running. However, within 10 years, they're predicting electrical outlets may not be used as much as they have been. Now, we are talking about using the power of the sun, solar energy, and they say we might be able, through solar energy, to plug devices into the clothes that you wear, that we wear. Far-fetched? Science fiction? I don't think so. They're really working on this. A world of fabric infused with the power of the sun. Well, solar cells have been something that we have been working with for a long time. And there's a chemist, John Babbing, and some of the people that he's working with at Pennsylvania State University decided to do something different. They embedded solar cells within flexible wires that can be woven into fabric. Now, they're pretty much of the same design as a rooftop solar cell, and that's containing a negatively charged layer, a positive charged layer, and a neutral layer sandwiched between them. Now, this is what happens in these threads. The photons, the light particles from the sun, they come into the outer layer of the rooftop cell. They initiate a photovoltaic effect, and that sends a whole slew of reactions across the charged layers, and it generates usable power. You could be up on Mount Everest and have enough solar energy, one, to keep you warm, that is, until the storms come in, to keep you warm, but also maybe to give you a portable breathing apparatus where you wouldn't have to take those heavy oxygen tanks with you. Thought? Yep. They said that they have devised a new way of creating a semiconducting sandwich using flexible hollow fiber optic threads. And it's amazing what they are able to do. Now, the wires are made about 3 feet long, and he said we've been able to weave it into a fabric, and it's only one layer of fabric, but it's still fabric, and it's lightweight. So you could recharge your phone and other devices, but they said it might be something that could be woven into uniforms of soldiers that might be in cold weather, and it would make their uniforms lighter. Just all kinds of things could be utilized by this. Science fiction, well, usually it comes with someone asking the question, what can we do to make something better? And that's what the people at Pennsylvania State University have done, and who knows the applications that are going to be made with it. Amazing, amazing stuff. Oh, I needed to tell you, my next newsletter coming out, I am going to have in there a shortbread recipe. Now, this is a very basic shortbread recipe, and I'll be sharing it with you this week. But I have to tell you, little did I realize when I decided to test this before putting it in the newsletter, you better have some pretty strong hands. Or if you have a mixer, you need to know that mixer is only going to be able to work this to a certain point. Anyway, I'll share that with you later on this week. Fascinating stuff. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break in just a moment, and know that you can give me a call if you'd like me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Give me a buzz at 888-627-6008. Donna Sebo here. We'll be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Good health is something all of us want to have. Being aware of what we eat, its nutritional value, and how to balance our physical needs with our busy schedules is always a challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time goes a long way towards helping us meet this challenge. Amino Muscle Snack Time is a nutritional food product that is portable, tasty, and in chewable tablet form, vanilla and honey flavors, a bonus for maintaining a healthy amino acid balance for healthy muscles. Amino Muscle Snack Time can be used anytime, anywhere, first thing in the morning to kickstart your metabolism. Take 20 minutes before or after a workout to help recover and build muscle. Take mid-morning or mid-afternoon to help curb cravings for unhealthy snacks. Weight loss, appetite control. Only top of the line and no genetically modified ingredients are used, no caffeine added. These chewable tablets can be ordered through Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com. Take charge and jumpstart your food program by adding Amino Muscle Snack Time by visiting Amazon.com or SquatSponge.com for more information. Order now.
Hi, this is Donna. Before I start talking with you about Batman to the Rescue, it's a delightful story. I wanted to talk about how we really need to take care of ourselves as the weather is evolving closer and closer to deeper cold temperatures and colds and influenzas. You know, there's so many people, especially the holiday season, that start feeling run down, and they don't realize that there just might be some little things that they could do in their everyday life. One, getting more sleep. Most of us go through a level of sleep deprivation because we think we're supposed to be superhumans and operating like 24/7, and that doesn't work very well. But I just thought I'd share a few health points with you this morning, and that is that one little point I want to share this morning is 90% of the body's immune system is found lining the intestinal tract. This is something a lot of people are not aware of, and it's so important to know that you can do things that are going to enhance your body. And I'll share a tip with you that I have done for the past couple of years that has worked very well for me. And that is because I'm a tea drinker, I really enjoy this, putting fresh ginger, grated fresh ginger, in my tea in the morning. Ginger is a wonderful, wonderful addition to food, and it is very healthy for you. And in Asian cultures, they've used it for generations. But I find that I really enjoy it in my tea, and it provides a flavor, but I grate it. I use a small piece of fresh ginger, grate it so that the oils and juices are released from the root itself, and that goes right into my tea. Boiling hot water goes on top of it, and it just seems to do wonderful things for me. So I'll just share that with you, and I just have not had the challenges with colds and viruses and other things. And it's very important to remember cleanliness, keeping the hands washed, especially when you're out in public places. Be aware that when you're in crowded malls, the likelihood of picking up a bug somewhere is pretty high. That's just because of the numbers game. You're out in an environment where a lot of people are doing a lot of things, and you just need to remember, wash your hands. Don't, if you're public, try to keep your hands away from your nose and your eyes, and the mouth, if you don't have a chance to wash them, or do sometimes what I do. I'll carry little handy wipes and just carry them around with me and just remember to wipe my hands periodically. And I don't, you know, you don't need to have a problem. But the body has its own natural immune system. If you take care of it, it really is going to help you. Now, this is a tip by Carol Roberts, who's a physician. She said there are some very good supplements that you can put into the body that really help the autoimmune system that's in the stomach area to work effectively for you. She said glutamine, G-L-U-T-A-M-I-N-E, is an amino acid. And she said it's used by the cells in the stomach. And the butyrate, B-U-T-Y-R-A-T-E, that's a fatty acid, and that's done and pre-digested protein, and that can be coming through seaweed, believe it or not, and or fish. And she said if you have an intestinal lining that's weak, that actually can help you heal that part of the body if you're having problems with it. She She supports ginger. She supports aloe, licorice roots, probiotics, and flavonoids like rutin, quercetin, and hesperidin. She said it helps, those last three, the flavonoids, help to prevent a leaky gut, which a lot of people are experiencing at this time. And again, we go back to diet. We go back to patterns. So be healthy. Be aware that you can take care of your body. And by the way, her book is called Good Medicine, A Return to Common Sense. Carol Roberts, a delightful, delightful lady. Well, I wanted to share this story about Batman to the rescue. And actually, the fellow, John Buckland, and he had an assistant. It was Captain America. And see these guys in their outfits. It's just really wonderful. Bob Markham is the other gentleman. He was Captain America. And they were in the American Legion Hall in Milton, West Virginia. And there was this group of kids. They were there to, you know, to entertain the kids and also how educate them as to how they could be a very significant part of their community. In other words, teaching these children some basic things through these fun Marvel characters. And the first thing that started off the program was the statement by John. He said, the important thing is to always do the right thing. It's very important to know that. Well, he just had made that statement when somebody rushes in and says, there's a house on fire down the street. Well, he immediately said, okay, boom, we're out of here. And his buddy, Bob, who was Captain America, both of them, they were both firefighters, they decided, okay, we've got to help these people. Is there anybody inside the house? And actually, John had been trained as a soldier. He was over in Iraq. He was a veteran, as well as having been a firefighter. And so he shouted to someone, we've got to break in. And by golly, that's what they did. They absolutely put it all together. And I have Mr. Markham's first name wrong. His first name is Troy Markham. And by golly, these two men, Troy and Bob, managed to break inside the house. And they broke in through the window because they couldn't get the door down. They threw a cement brick through the window. And, of course, it shattered the glass. And by golly, what he found was a cat. Fortunately, there wasn't any people in there, but he grabbed the cat, and they thought they were going to lose the animal. A crowd had gathered around, naturally, including the children that John had been talking to. And John started giving CPR. That's right. He opened the little cat's mouth, was breathing in, pressing down on its chest, and by golly, the cat came too. Now, the kids were watching all of this. And, of course, here he is in costume, and they just said, Batman saved the cat. They got so excited about it. And, of course, everybody else that was there, here are these two men in the superhero garb, and they absolutely were just the hit of the day. You can imagine how dynamic that would have been. But both of these men said they just did what was right. And that's what they conveyed to the children. They said, if we all did something to help somebody else, the world would be a better place. And I agree. This is Donna Sebo. Join me tomorrow. We're going to have some good tips to share with you to make life easier. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are on this fabulous planet of ours. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. We're delighted that you were able to join us and invite you to tell your friends and family about the program. Have a wonderful day.